What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday. My main man, Jake Sheehy.
Yes, sir.
How we doing, buddy?
Man, blessed to be here. Great day to be alive.
Great day to be alive.
It's amazing. It's amazing, man. I'm happy.
We talked about some stats right before we hit record. You're a little nervous about some of the things we were talking about.
So I'm gonna try to
cheer you up a little bit today.
I'm a little terrified, but I'm excited to be here and I'm ready to learn. I'm ready to do this.
Nice. Well, we'll dive in, guys. Those of you that are new to these episodes, or maybe this is your first one listening, we do two episodes every single week. On Wednesdays, we go through some trending topics, some different stats in the industry, all those things that affect our short-term rental investing journey. And then on Fridays, we come and interview short-term rental investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly. So today is the former. We're going to dive into some trending topics, some things that are front and center for us as short-term rental investors. And Jake always does some research on what we're going to talk about. So lay it on me, brother.
Okay, all right. So we're going to talk about a little bit here about what the media is saying, and then what's the actual reality. And then we're going to kind of go into how does this actually affect the person listening, how to navigate this, how to become successful in these areas. You know, we have a lot of things about inflation or mortgage rates or prices or all these things. And so we have a lot of negative stuff. Yep. And let's dive into it. Let's see what the media is saying. Right now we have higher mortgage rate payments. Gas is eating travel budgets. People aren't traveling as much. Gas is so expensive. Airfare is so expensive. TSA lines are crazy. Commercial space, it costs less. And of course, maybe that could crash. Maybe we'll tiptoe onto that. Consumer spending is getting squeezed. We have inflation. People aren't making that much money. They're not using that money to go out and travel as much, right? When we've seen for the past 10, 20, well, however long years, the housing bubble, it could burst, right? Yep. That's what they're kind of saying. But you know, we can back it up with articles and statistics on maybe that's not the truth here. But then let's dive into the positives, right?
Yeah,
with Airbnb. We'll talk about these things and then we'll dive into some other stuff. We're going to talk about consumer demand. We're going to talk about travel growth. We're going to talk about year-over-year numbers and investment premiums. And then we'll dive into how that affects you. But first off, let's go with the consumer demand.
Yeah.
Do you want to start with the Airbnb statistics or where do you want to start with that one?
Yeah, let's take it back first. So it sounds like what we're really looking at is the overall real estate market, the overall economy, some consumer sentiment. And I think it's really, really important for investors that are listening to this, if you're a current investor or thinking about investing into short-term rentals or any sort of real estate investment, you're really navigating two different markets all the time. One, you're navigating the acquisition market, right? The actual real estate market. In our case, the single family homes market, right? Mm. And we're looking at supply, demand. We're looking at the cost to acquire a property, debt service, all of those different things. Like, what is it going to cost me to enter this game and invest in this game? And whether it's commercial, whether it's multifamily, whether it's single family, whether it's just long-term rents, short-term rents, whatever it is, you're always looking at the overall real estate market, right? And so those are some of the articles that are very front and center for us. Mm. The housing bubble is going to crash. I had you do this. We went back a decade and you showed me 5 or 6 articles from the exact same people, the USA Today's, the CNN's, the Fox. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. They're trying to predict the housing bubble crash. And every single year for the last decade, they're talking about the bubble's going to burst, right? And so
every year.
So we see that all the time, right? Yeah. We know that. And at some point, they might be right. They probably will be right, right? You know, we just don't show that a bubble is going to burst outside of just looking at high prices. Prices are really high right now. And they've been high, but they stabilized, right? They've been pretty flatline for about 3 years now. Since really 2023, they started to really stabilize and kind of flatline. And this has been kind of our depression right now as far as the prices have been depressed because overall demand has gone down because rates skyrocketed, cost of owning these homes has gone up, all those different things. So there is, you have to understand when it's not always, when we look at articles and we look at data, there is a case to be made for all of this stuff, good or bad. You can find stats to support almost any argument. You really have been able to.
Yes.
And that's no different. So you have to take all of these different things, all these conversations with a grain of salt and say, hey, listen, is this something that I can navigate and how am I going to navigate this? Because most of the time when the everybody says is the best time to buy, you're usually late to the party. Mm. When everybody says it's not a good time to buy, that's your sign to buy, because by the time they say, oh man, I wish I would have bought then, is right. the time that they were saying don't buy. Don't buy. They look back, fast forward 3 to 5 years, and they're like, man, I wish I would have bought then. Mm. So that happens all the time. So let me go back to my original point, and we'll pull some numbers up that you want to talk about. We're looking at two things.
Okay.
The acquisition side, real estate side of the marketplace, right? How much is it going to cost me to buy this? How much is my debt service going to be? What are interest rates? All that kind of stuff.
Right.
The flip side of that coin is if I'm buying an investment, I need somebody to pay me for that investment. In our side, they're going to rent as guests. Commercial, might be a hotel, might be an industrial place, it might be a healthcare spot, whatever it is, whatever sector of the commercial space. I have a consumer on the back end that is going to rent this property from me. Long-term rentals. I need to find a household that wants to rent my property from me. Mm-hmm. And so on the back end, there's a marketplace as well, and there's economics involved in that. And so I have to look and say, what does the overall consumer demand look like? Is it going up? Mm-hmm. Is it going down? Is the inventory, my competitors, are they going up? Are they going down? Like, right. what does it really look like on the back end? Mm-hmm. And so I really have to analyze two different markets. What people focus on a lot of times is the front end market. And usually when the news is the worst on the front end, that's your best buying opportunities. Mm. Because there's not a lot of good buying opportunities when the news is really good, right? And so it is a good indicator that we have a good time to buy when all of these different things are stacking up to right. the average consumer is not going to be interested in this property, right? And so for us, particularly with single family homes that we're using as investments, when the single family home buyer starts to sit on the sidelines, they don't want to buy, the cost of living is going up, maybe their interest rates are going up, they don't have as much disposable income, they can't qualify as much, maybe lending tightens up, right. all of those things that are affecting them negatively keeps them out of the market. And so what happens is, and we're seeing right now, that delta of buyers and sellers is as wide as it's been in a long time. I think 2014 was the last time it was this wide, and it was a massively different look back in 2014. But the gap between buyers and sellers is pretty wide right now. There's actually more sellers than there are buyers. And so when that happens, that is a big sign for me as an investor that now's a really good time to buy. However, I have to make money on this property. Yeah. So now I have to say, is the same thing happening on the back end for us with short-term rental consumers where they're using these properties? And this is where this doesn't happen very often, is we're lining up where it's a pretty depressed market on the front end where we can buy, but a very robust market on the back end where our consumers are paying for these properties. Demand continues to go up. The consumer continues to spend more and more money every single year. And it looks really, really good on the back end if you know how to play this game. That doesn't happen that often. And this is where I tell people right now, we're going to look back and we're going to say, this year is probably the best buying opportunity we may see in our lifetimes in the short-term rental space. Now, let's say we're talking about long-term rentals. I've got a multifamily property. We're seeing that rents are starting to go down a little bit. And so they've always gone up. They'll go back up. But right now, they're dropping a bit. And they're dropping. Real estate is always very regional. But many areas are starting to drop rents. And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I might have a good buying opportunity, but my back-end revenue is actually not as good as it used to be, right? And so hotel, motel space, RevPAR, all the hospitality space out when you remove short-term rentals, that market has been going down a little bit, right? And so there's a lot of signs on the back end for some other places, some other single family, long-term rents, rentals. Rents are going down.
Right.
Prices and cost to hold these properties are going up. And so might be a good time to buy, but I got to make sure that I have a delta there to make some money on the on the property. So with short-term rentals, we're seeing a really golden buying opportunity, in my opinion, depressed on the front end, pretty robust on the back end, simply stated, right? And so I'll pause for a minute because I know you have a bunch of stuff written down. Does that make sense of what—
That does make sense.
So as we're talking about this and as you're listening to this and as you're considering whether you're in the game or not in the game yet, is now a good time to operate in this game. In my opinion, it's one of the best we've ever seen.
Mm. Okay, I brought this up. Do you even want to read stuff like this about the buyers and sellers?
Yeah, so I said since 2014. So 2013, record 630 more home sellers than buyers. In contrast to 2014, when the market was recovering with a more balanced, low-priced inventory, sellers outnumbered buyers by roughly, 2025, 2026 features high mortgage rates leading to record low buyer demand, unsold inventory piling up, and sellers outnumbering buyers by roughly 44% of the market. Now, one of the big differences too.
Okay.
And I don't even know if we can look this up.
Okay.
Right now, there is the demand. There's way more buyers than there are, way more sellers than there are buyers. Right. That means it's a buying market, right? You can get good deals. You can negotiate. There's more inventory to choose from. Those are all good things if I'm a buyer.
Okay.
Not a great thing if I'm a seller. And so what if, we've got a massive difference between buyers and sellers right now.
Okay.
Biggest we've seen since 2013.
Uh-huh.
That indicates if all of those people are saying the bubble's going to burst, that would be a really good time for the bubble to burst because that would say prices have to come down. Why aren't they coming down? They're stabilizing. There's still enough buyers to support because even though that delta is pretty wide, the number of overall sellers and the number of overall buyers is way less than it was back then. And so we have way less, like that inventory has dropped, even though buyers have dropped. Absolutely true. I totally buy into it because we're seeing we can negotiate it now.
Right.
And so we know the demand for the ones that are on the market, the houses that are on the market, the buyers aren't there. Here's the big difference. There's a massive amount of money sitting on the sidelines. We have $7.8 trillion sitting on the sidelines in cash equivalent accounts. That means bank accounts, money market funds, things that are very liquid that can deploy at any minute. When that a lot of that money starts to go into real estate typically, right? And so it's normally going to go into those markets, and tangible assets like real estate are very favorable for the money that's sitting there. Now that money has been though piling up for 2 or 3 years. And so it keeps getting more. We've been talking about it for a little while. We're watching it really closely because as soon as the consumer sentiment says, hey, we're coming back in, we're going to have a massive inventory problem again, and it's going to flip on upside on its head. And we're going to see, because if you look at those charts, the gap between buyers and sellers, try to pull one up.
Okay.
You're going to notice that the overall supply between now and 2014, even though we have more sellers than buyers, and that gap is as wide as it's been for a long time, the number of actual homes on the market, home buyers and sellers are both bagging off. Yeah, go to that one.
This one?
Yep. So let's say estimate number of U.S. home buyers and sellers actively in the market. So look at that gap when the gap was really wide last time. So 2013 to 2015, right? That gap in 2014, pretty wide gap. Right. However, there was 2.6 million homes on the market and there was 2 million buyers in the market. So you had 600,000 deficit of buyers and sellers. Does anybody remember what the real estate market was doing from 2014, 15, 16, all the way up?
No.
Prices were going up. Prices were still going up significantly. And so let's say that gap, right? And then it caught up and it was very even. Buyers and sellers were very even all the way till COVID. And then boom, we had way more buyers than sellers. And that's when we saw this massive spike in prices.
Right.
Instead of a 5 to 10% appreciation every year, depending on your market that you were in, all of a sudden we had 50% appreciation, 40% appreciation. We had these double digit appreciation numbers, and that's what that gap is showing
you. Yeah.
So this shows us when we can get good deals, when we're not getting good deals. People are paying absolute premiums. We saw that right after COVID, right? Seeing is we've got the sellers and buyer gap, again, a 600,000 person deficit there. However, we went from 2.6 million homes on the market back then, and it's dropped all the way to 2 million. And so you have way less homes on the market. When this script flips, I think you're going to see a massive jump again. And it's going to look like that post-COVID, because all of a sudden, when people start hearing that, hey, Jake took some money out of his money market fund and he's putting them in real estate, and then the news articles start to say, oh, real estate's pretty attractive again, and the masses start to buy in that now's a good time to buy, and there's a whole bunch of money sitting there to buy with, then it's going to dump into these asset classes. And I think that my prediction is you're going to be really happy to have some assets that you're picking up right now. So that 3 to 5 years from now, when we look back, you're like, all those people that got so lucky that they bought in 2026, you know, because that's how they're going to talk about us. They're going to talk about us, in my opinion, that we're going to be the lucky ones. Because we, but nobody's going to say, well, guess what? 17% of consumers feel like now is a good time to buy. That means 83% think it's not a good time to buy. So that's what, those are the things. So going back off, I keep taking you to different things than you probably had to on the agenda to talk about today.
I do have a question for you. Yeah. How much of this do you think is just being in the average American's ear, just of media and just saying now's not a good time, and so they just don't think it? I mean, is it just going to be a certain amount of articles or social media pushes to make people want to start buying and believe in it?
I think it's
again?
It is the danger of what's going, it's always been the danger of you know, people listening to the propaganda that's out there. And it is all propaganda. Yeah. Good, like, it doesn't matter what side you're listening on, it's propaganda. And so you try to back out, but it's none of us can do it. We all have our biases. Yeah. We all believe certain things. We all are going to navigate one way or the other. I mean, it's so, and when you start to feed those biases, and the amount of information that can feed those biases, and the algorithms know your biases and they continue to feed it. You know, so if you're scared to death today, you're going to be way more scared tomorrow, because everything that hits your feed is going to be, you know, feeding that fear.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that it is, I think it's a massive, but it always has been. It's just at such a level now. I mean, look what happens with the markets right now. I can't imagine. I've never been a stock market guy.
Right.
Never been. I've always been a real estate guy, and I know that people do very, very well with stocks. I'm not saying anything bad. I know that there's a you know, a lot of people have done very well with that as an investment. The fact that, you know, every Friday Trump can come up with something to try to get the market to move so that the weekend looks good and then it tanks in during the week or whatever, or he, you know, whatever is going on that gets tweeted and then it gets put in the news media outlets, everything else. It's just, I feel like, and it doesn't even have to be anything other than a headline or a tweet and it moves markets.
Right. No, yeah.
The thing I love about real estate is, because it's illiquid, what I mean by that is it's hard to buy and sell. It's hard to transact. You can't do it on an emotional whim today. I could hear a tweet, I can't hit the sell button on Friday because I'm panicking on my real estate, right? And so real estate is a more stable asset. They talk about the stable coins and everything else. And real estate is a very stable asset because it's hard to buy and sell.
Right.
And so it doesn't have these emotional swings necessarily to it like the markets do. But that is a very good example of this narrative that we listen to that is fed to us, and we already knew no bad news sells. We're all attracted to it. It's like there's a car wreck, but you can't look away, right? And it's like I can't look away from this bad stuff, and so it gets in my brain and it gets in my head, and I have to back out and say, hey, listen, what do I believe the reality is? And, you know, what is the narrative? And what is the reality?
Right.
And we try to, as best we can, and we're not perfect at it either. We all, again, every single one of us buys into those biases and feeds into that at some point.
Let me mix these two.
And to some extent.
Let me mix these two. We know we're hearing you say that now is a good time to buy. You can kind of negotiate these deals, blah, blah, blah. And someone may want to buy into that, and they go, okay, I want to do it. But then now they also hear, Sean, the market is way too saturated in some of these areas. So where do I even buy? Where do I even go to? Where should I even start? Should I start in a location I love? What do you think about where to buy?
So again, we go back to the two different markets, right? It's like, okay, I'm looking at the data on the front end when I'm buying and I'm telling you it's a really good time to buy. Well, you have to know what you're going to do with it on the back end, right? So then I got to make some decisions on the back end. How much money do I have? Where's my buying power? What market should I go into? So you start analyzing where the consumer's going, where the consumer's spending the money, how much money are they spending, what type of property, what size of property, all of those different things. Again, it's data on the back end that you're going to look and help you navigate those decisions. I might say, hey, I want a beach property. I want a coastal property, but I might not have the buying power to be there. Or I might choose a market because some of the best markets that are actually dropping in price, that we're seeing price drops, many of them are coastal markets in the Southeast. A lot of them are Florida, right? And so you're seeing, okay, there was a massive spike there in prices. They were getting massive premiums during that gap that we looked at after COVID. And now all of a sudden, those are coming back down a little bit to reality. There's there's a lot of, like, again, more sellers on the market. They're competing with each other. They need to get rid of these houses, want to sell these houses. Maybe they're depressed a little bit, or maybe they're just literally mentally depressed because they listen to the news and think, I got to get out of this before it absolutely loses all my value. Mm. When was the last time real estate went to zero?
Man,
doesn't,
never,
right?
Never.
Doesn't. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, when was the last time real estate lost 50% across the board?
Never. 2008, I don't
no,
know.
No, never.
Never?
The average over that four-year period, real estate lost 25%. So it was across the board. Now you had markets, individual markets that were close to 50%, and maybe I think we had like Miami, Vegas, Phoenix, some of those markets that lost close to 50% in their value. But they were also the ones that went up so fast as well. You see these markets that appreciate and go up really, really high and really, really fast during that upswing. They also, so it comes back down to reality, but overall, they were losing about 5%, 4 or 5% a year for a 4 or 5 year period, you know, 4 or 5 year period from 2007-ish to about 2011.
Wow. Okay. Yes. I looked this up. Yes. Many coastal housing markets that experienced extreme spikes during the pandemic and are now undergoing a correction with prices pulling back, particularly Florida and parts of the South due to high insurance, blah, 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 inventory and other things. That's really interesting. So you're seeing things with
the market. I like when I say stuff and you pull it up and it actually shows it.
I mean,
like
that's what I'm here for, man. That's what I'm trying to do. All right. So we talked about now the markets maybe being a tough on where to buy or that kind of thing. But what about, like, have you noticed anything on the size of the home? Have you noticed smaller homes are performing better than bigger homes? Or does the type of home have anything to do with it?
No. So you are seeing different markets have different trends. And so depending on the market you're going into, you might find and you might lean toward a smaller home versus a large home. A lot of people will blanket say you make more money on the larger homes. Obviously, your overall revenue is better. Also, you have to realize that if I'm buying a 1 or 2 bedroom home, my price per square foot that I'm paying for that home is going to be higher the smaller the home is in any individual market. So, you know, I'm not like, so if I'm going into Destin, Florida, the price per square foot that I pay for a 1 or 2 bedroom home is going to be a lot higher than me buying a 5 or 6 bedroom home in Destin, Florida, just because I still have an HVAC system. I still have a roof. I still have a lot of the kitchen, like a lot of things that are money is spent on in a home. I have to have that same amount of stuff in a 1 or 2 bedroom as I do in a 4 or 5 bedroom. So I still have to buy the same amount of systems, right? And so I just don't have as much bedrooms or square footage to spread it out across. And I might get I might buy a smaller unit or whatever else. So if you're listening, I get it. Like, but your overall price per square foot for the small home is going to be larger. What that means is, When I buy, if I'm an investor, my ratio between my acquisition cost and the revenue that I generate is what I'm really looking at to see if it's an investable property and market. And so what happens is the smaller homes, I'm paying more for the smaller homes, but they don't necessarily always give me a lot bigger, a big premium on rents. Sometimes they do. And so, but let's say I'm paying a little bit higher price per square foot for that revenue that I'm generating. That ratio between my price per square foot and the revenue is not as favorable as maybe buying a 5 or 6 bedroom home. And my ratio between the revenue there and my price per square foot here is more favorable because I'm paying less per square foot than, and so I can spread that across that revenue. My ratio between acquisition and revenue is a more favorable. So we're looking at that. Long-winded answer. The point of all this is it depends. Okay. And it's data driven. We look at that. You're just going to pull the numbers. The numbers are going to tell me whether one, and I start with my personal numbers. How much do I have down? How much do I qualify for? I might have preferences on certain markets or certain size of homes. And it, you know, I might not be in a position to do what I wanted to do, but I can take what I have, where I'm starting at, and see based on those numbers where I should go. And so in most of these markets right now, it's, you know, it's a good time to buy, right? Yeah. It's a good time to go in and negotiate deals and find deals. And so, but are there challenges? Yeah. Is it harder to get a loan? Yes. It's harder to get a loan right now. You know, you have to be a really good borrower, a really qualified borrower to get a loan. There's DSCR loans are the, you know, they're making the debt service coverage ratio loans where they're saying, hey, listen, we'll just look at it as an asset-based loan, but they're getting a little bit more conservative because of what they're seeing on the commercial space, right? That we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, you got a massive amount of commercial debt that's going to be that's coming due this year. It's at maturity, and those are debt service coverage ratio asset based type loans. And it's there's nothing. I mean, so there those lenders are getting a little tighter. They're not as willing to lend out money. And it feels like sometimes they're only lending money to people that don't even need the money at times. And so you have to navigate some of those, some of those things. But overall strategy of this being a good market or a bad market, I am very, very bullish on this market right now.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I'm going to read this. I'm going to ask you a very open-ended question. So here we go. Yeah, I'm just going to read. I'm just going to back it up again. Smaller homes are frequently more expensive on a price per square foot basis due to fixed construction costs, kitchen, bathrooms, plumbing, HVAC, blah, 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 being spread over a smaller area as well as higher demand for starter homes. Okay. Just going back up what you're saying there. Now, this is take a second if you need to answer this or have a follow-up question, because this seems like a very open-ended question, okay? I want to ask about how to best position a listener for success. They're hearing these things. Do they think they need to pay off stuff so that they can look like a better person to lend to? Do they need to really analyze the game first? Do they need to go over their goals and mindset? Like, how should someone best position themselves to succeed in a market like this?
Yeah, so one, all of the above, but first and foremost, educate yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't just read headlines. Try to figure out, based on what I was just saying, the two different markets, right? The buying side of it, the acquisition market, and then the back end demand of what you're actually trying, how you're trying to make money. And so you have to understand the consumer, where they're spending money, all of that stuff. But how am I going to get the best deals? And also how, if I'm getting the best deals, am I in a position to get a good deal? Am I lendable, right? Do I have the down payment money? Do I have the money to invest in these properties? These properties do not all, they do not all perform equally. I mean, we have talked about this and beat this horse dead, and we will continue to beat this horse dead. This, these properties toward the top of the market, they make all the money. And I don't care if you're top of the one-bedroom market, two-bedroom market, whatever market you're playing in, the top properties in your market are making the bulk of the money. It is not spread out equally. We do not all get our fair share of business. This is a game of unfair share advantages and unfair share of money being distributed by the consumer. And so I'm going to educate myself on what it takes to not only acquire the right properties in the right areas and get the best lending and get these things set up correctly, but also I'm going to educate myself on what the consumer is willing to pay more for. If you give a consumer a reason to pay more, they will. Consumer, like consumer reports show across the board, 85 to 87% of consumers always say, and it doesn't matter what consumer report you read, when they're asked these questions, they over, you know, unanimously say 85 to 87% of them, they don't shop on price.
Right.
They shop for the best experience, in our case, the best experience, the best product, the best quality. First and foremost, price is secondary. Consumers only shop on price if you are a commodity, if you don't give them a reason that you are better or that they should spend more money with you. And so understanding and educating yourself on what that takes can get you really excited, especially if you start to see the results on the back end. And I'm not talking about one or two properties. Go find somebody that has hundreds of properties that they can show you operating in the top of the market. And I'll give you a hint. If you reach out to us, we can do that. But whoever you're talking to, let them show you not one or two success stories. Say, hey, listen, I want a recipe I can tap into. And what does that recipe look like? And do I even want to play it? Right? I'm in a group with a lot of entrepreneurs, and we run businesses, and we talk about this stuff, and we say, man, if I knew what it was going to take to get to where we're at, I'm not sure I would have signed up in the beginning, right? And so it's important to educate yourself, and where do you start? Because everybody wants the view, nobody wants to climb. And I'm not here to tell you it's going to be an easy road. I'm going to tell you that there is a recipe and a blueprint to follow that you can get and have success in this game. And it does not seem to be slowing down as far as the consumer is concerned and where they're spending their money.
Yeah, it's not slowing down. Man, I just do want to talk about that at all, but here, I want to read these three things here just because, I like it when you're talking. I like to be able to back up some of the things you're saying. You know what I'm saying? Short-term rentals are still profitable, blah, blah, blah. But the easy money era is over. Success now requires smart location choices, realistic budgeting, treating yourself like a real rental business. We're going into that. To maximize Airbnb earnings through luxury, create a high-end Instagrammable experience featuring amenities, blah, blah, blah. We go into, we can do a bigger pockets, or we can pull up the Airbnb's stuff right now that are always talking about experiences. So I'm just trying to
Yeah. Nail on so even that's more that's how saying. To succeed. Yeah. Go back to this. STR investment premium is the highest it's been since 2023. This is massive. This is huge.
Yeah.
The investment premium, what that is the difference between the average mortgage payment and the average monthly revenue in the short-term rental space. Mm. And so the delta is the premium, right? And that premium was really, really good right after COVID. So that short-term rental investment premium was massive right after COVID. And that was that era where if you had a short-term rental, you looked like a genius investor. It was like having toilet paper during COVID. Everybody was making money with short-term rentals. And then all of a sudden, everybody's saying, hey, look at me. I'm a genius. Now I'm going to teach you how to do it.
Right.
So, then we realized that premium dropped significantly starting in 2022. Right?
Yeah.
Cost of properties went up, interest rates went up. And so that delta between the revenue and the cost to own this property, that shrunk, right? And it becomes more of a mature market. So now that premium is not, it's not like, hey, every single property out there makes money. I have to treat it like a real business. I have to do different things if I want to make any money. And we're actually seeing though, that premium dropped in 2022 and it continued to drop, it bottomed it out in 2024. Mm. And now going into 2026, we're at a higher level than we were in 2023. Wow. And it's going up. That's actually a pretty crazy statistic. What that is telling you, because these are just averages. So what's really interesting, go back to that chart one more time. So you see where that blue line, the monthly revenue, that's continuing to go up. That means the average property, this is our fair share of business. Your fair share of business year over year is going up. That means consumers are spending more money. Mm. And if you spread all the money being spent over all the properties, the average fair share of business is going up. And, and it started going back up in 2025, right? And so we're seeing the average that's an indicator of consumer demand, right? That's what I'm trying to get at is the consumers are staying. I'm willing to spend money here.
Right.
The next line is the purple line is saying, here's what it costs to own a home. And it keeps going up and it skyrockets in 2022, mid 2022 when rates really just went up overnight. And then they've just kind of been hanging out. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we saw they dropped a little bit last year. They're going back up right now. And so that line's just kind of even. So that delta is made up not by the cost of homes. So if cost of homes go down, then that premium is better, right?
Right.
I pay less to own this home. The revenue stays up there. That premium is better. The premium is going up because rental demand is going up. Mm. And so in spite of, I don't know if I used that term correctly or not. I say despite a lot. What I'm trying to say is regardless of what's happening on the purchasing of the property, right? Mm. Again, we have headwinds to navigate, high prices, high interest rate. We've got really good inventory that we can choose from, which we haven't had in a long time.
Yeah.
So we finally feel like as a buyer, I can actually negotiate. I can actually do some of these things. But when I start to do all that stuff and I look at that, regardless of all that, the consumer on the back end is spending more money. Yeah. And so that premium is going up. That's a really good sign. Again, amazing. those are really good things and positive signs for an investor to be able to make money on short-term rentals if done correctly.
Right. Man, okay. I like how we kind of started a little strong and now we're ending on a high note, it seems like. Yeah. I really like this. So let's go into one of our last points here. Let's talk about some long-term advice. Is this something that you need to jump on now, or do you think you have enough time? Could you jump on this in 2 to 3, 5 years, or is this like an act now? Any kind of advice?
I feel like this script could flip anytime. Wow. I do feel like, in fact, if you go read AirDNA's Consumer Outlook for 2026, they are actually thinking that there's going to be a bottom out period. Where demand is actually going to skyrocket and bounce off what we call it's at right now in mid 2026 and just skyrocket through 2027. And so I actually agree with this. And I think that here's where I think that it could flip at any given time is the economy, consumers, we're looking for some good news. Mm-hmm. The minute we have some, I think that you're going to have, and I think that we want it really bad. And so I think we're going to start look to buy into it, even though the bad news is always what sells. There's a lot of indicators. One, that there's a lot of money sitting on the sidelines.
Right.
There's also a lot of indicators that, the consumer has been very, very resilient. what are they going to do when there are actually some good times ahead, right? Yeah. And we've been sitting in this like a little depression since about 2022, right? I mean, we had that COVID era, you know, party, and then we've had a hangover for a little bit in these markets. And I think that, you know, in the very near future, I don't know when, I don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
What I would suggest is stacking the odds in your favor right now, because this is a long-term game. Don't just go buy properties that can't perform or not going to perform. Guess what? We still say no to 8 out of 10 properties we underwrite. I'm not saying go buy anything and everything. I hope, like, I know those of you that are listening, you made it this far. Yeah. Listen to me clearly. I wish I would have said it sooner. You can't just go buy anything and make money with short-term rentals. That game is over. Mm. We're not in that environment. So I'm a very, very bullish and very positive on the environment we're in, because we know how to make money in this environment.
Right.
And it's very exciting to be able to get some good deals on properties right now. Mm. And I know everybody's waiting for the bottom to fall out. Yeah. I just am not buying into that. I don't see it happening. Mm-hmm. I don't see any indicators that it's going to happen. I mean, we have 600,000 plus more sellers than there are buyers right now, and the prices aren't dropping. Like, I mean, we're still pretty much hanging on to the prices of where we're at, right? Yeah. And so I'm just not buying into you wait for the bottom. I think you're going to be waiting for a long time.
Mm.
And so my advice is have a long-term plan. I 100% think, 1,000% think that the average American consumer without a plan, a secondary plan outside of what you were supposed to do, get a job, pay into your 401k, wait for Social Security, that plan doesn't work. So I'm 1,000% in favor of go have a supplemental plan, and which I believe short-term rentals are a very good plan for some people, not for everybody.
Right.
But whether it's that or something else, my long-term advice is you better be starting to stack up assets for the long term, because I think that when the script flips, one, we're going to be really, really happy we had those assets. If it gets worse, we're going to be really happy we had assets.
Let me ask this. Say the script does flip. Say someone listens to this and they go, you know what, I got it. I got the money to buy. And they invest and they get a single-family home and they want to do short-term rental. And then maybe 2 years down the road, script flips. Right. And some great news starts happening and they see all this money pouring in and all these people want to start buying homes now. Right. Would it be a smart thing to then now try and sell that home for more? Or would you just hold
possibly.
On to it?
No, possibly. I mean, that's where you have options to say, okay, what's better?
Yeah.
Sell, trade up, make some money, put it somewhere else, or, you know, redeploy it into something bigger and better. There's a lot of options, right?
Right.
I could just say, hey, listen, it's a legacy property. I just want to have it. Somebody else is paying for it. They pay it off for me. I'm making good money on it. Like, I'm leaving it in my portfolio.
Right.
When the market changes, it gives you good options, right?
Right.
And so there's going to be a point, and I believe in the near future, that properties, especially if properties skyrocket again overnight, which would be the scariest thing for the short-term rental world, because that investment premium that we just looked at goes away.
Right.
It evaporates. Wow. Yeah. And so then it's very difficult to add properties to your portfolio and actually have the revenue on the back end to sustain them and support them.
Mm.
Right. And so there's going to be a time that happens. And I believe that's the most likely scenario of we're going to say, okay, prices got so high. It's great that I own these 10 properties. They all, you know, went up in value significantly and I've got that good thing, but I can't, you know, I can make money on them right now because my basis is so low, but I can't go buy any more properties. I can't add to my portfolio and still make money on the back end.
Right. I see.
And so, so that if you wait and wait and wait, and then that's the environment and you wait till everybody's buying, that's the challenge of that is now your back end market number two that I have to analyze is not paying me enough money to support those higher acquisition costs.
Mm.
And so I think that's going to be something we'll be talking about in the near future as well, that, man, we need to maximize what we have because it's difficult to go buy at today's prices and still make money.
Mm, that's really interesting.
I mean, we see that in markets like our backyard, Park City, Aspen, some of these really high priced markets.
Uh-huh.
You buy them, but you can't make money on them. You're supplementing them, but you're not. They're negative cash flow markets.
Mm, that's really interesting. Do you want to dive in? I mean, we're at 40 minutes. Do you want to dive? Should we push that to another episode, or do you want to dive into that a little bit?
What?
I have a I mean, what would you even do in that situation if you got five properties?
Yeah, let's put it into another one. Like, let's wrap this one up and keep this one at kind of the – this was kind of our economics class.
Okay.
Our macroeconomic stuff, right? And then we'll get into tactics on maybe another one.
Okay. All right, well, that's all we have for today.
Plus, I'm hungry. It's almost
lunchtime. 40 minutes. We did 40 minutes, guys, so I appreciate you sitting and listening. Thank you.
Okay, awesome, guys. Well, hopefully that was helpful. We kind of talked a little bit. I know I went a little off topic with Jake's notes and everything, but I think that's what you wanted to cover, too.
I'm excited. That was very educational. I loved it.
Awesome. Well, we will wrap it up. We always appreciate you guys joining us. Again, you guys, 58% of you that listen to our podcast regularly don't save it and follow the show. And so please subscribe, save it wherever you're watching or listening on. Most of you listen. And so what do you do on a podcast? Do you save it to your library, your favorites or something on Apple Podcasts?
Apple Podcasts.
Because I know like on mine, I have all my favorites. Is that what we want the call to action to be?
You can save it to your favorites. I would love it if you rated it. I want you to share the show, of course. Yeah. But if you're watching on YouTube, we have a lot of people watching. Make sure to subscribe. Just subscribe. Click like and subscribe.
Yeah.
Come on.
That those things help us. We don't run ads, sponsorships, so the only way this show grows is if you guys do that. And so it is very helpful for us, and we'd appreciate it as a kind of a thumbs up. But the ratings and send in those questions, support@odyssey.com. If you're like, hey, man, I wish Sean would dive into this. I want to hear him talk about this. I just have this question. Can you clarify something we already talked about? We love getting those messages from our listeners and always treat you with, as some of our favorites, right?
Yeah.
So it's awesome. Those. We love them. Yeah. And so send those in. And then the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.